Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. I welcome you all today. I love the concept of today's episode. We've never focused on a situation quite like this one. It might be difficult to talk about sometimes, but it's really important. We have these great support groups and ways to connect within our community, and friendships form. I see it happening with others, and I experience it myself. And we go through tough times together. So today, we have two amazing women who are no strangers to our podcast, Stephanie and Tasia. They are back to honor their beloved friend, Katie. I want to use a line that we use in Judaism when someone is no longer with us. May their memory be for a blessing. And I hope today's conversation about Katie's strength and amazing character will inspire us, so her memory will be our blessing. So I give you both a lot of credit for sharing your beautiful friend with our audience. But I also think it is so important because these friendships are unique. And, you know, there's things that we might share with our Mito friends that we don't share with other friends. And we should honor the importance of these friendships. And I appreciate your willingness, Stephanie and Tasia, for coming on today and talking about your beautiful friend. So welcome, both of you. And it's okay to show emotion. That's a healthy thing, right? I want to learn about Katie. So who wants to start off telling me who Katie, what kind of person she was like? Stephanie, do you want to start?
To introduce Katie, I will share the first time that I met her. So my son Christopher has LCHAD, and he was around 3, I would say, because Christopher and I always joke that everything happened when he was 3. So everything. So I don't know exactly how old he was, but I do remember this was kind of, Facebook was like super early. I don't even think I was on Facebook. So I met her through like old school, like how you meet people like back in the day, and through a special forum. And so we started emailing back and forth. And I remember one of the first email threads that we had together, you know, she was the first young adult at the time that I had met with LCHAD. And I don't remember exactly how old she was at the time, maybe 18 or 19. And I just remember sending an email to her and asking her tons of questions, right? Like just, and some of the questions that I asked when Christopher was small, I was like laugh about now, thinking like, do you like sweet potatoes too? Like, I mean, just like silly stuff, because you're just trying to find connection and like figure out what this life is going to look like. And so for Christopher, one of the biggest concerns that I had was him losing his vision, because with LCHAD, that's known to happen. And with his particular mutation, there was only one other mutation that existed in literature, and that person was legally blind by the time they were 14. And so I asked Katie, you know, how's your vision doing and how has that impacted like your life? And, you know, she sent me an email back with all my questions, like answered, but it was all in like 8 or 9 size font. And she's like, yes, I have LCHAD retinopathy, but I can still read this, you know? And that sums up who Katie was, in the sense that like, Katie was able to be very serious to like talk about her LCHAD, the implications of that, her story. She was willing to like quickly like just be honest with me about her experiences, but she's also going to bring in like that humor and be able to, you know, like lighten the mood and say like, hey, mom, it's going to be okay. Like we learn how to, you know, work through and navigate these things. And so when I think of Katie, that always brings back a smile to me, that her ability to bring in that humor. Tasia, I don't know how you would describe Katie.
Yeah, so I was thinking back to like when I was trying to like pinpoint, I'm like, when did I actually like first start talking to Katie? Like, it just seemed like we communicated and talked so often and so many times that I was like, when was that? And I realized it was back when I was in, it was like later in my college years, and I was like, you know, like trying to get through college and like the like accommodations when you have, you know, a rare disease at college. And I was kind of like, I think I was like disappointed because I remember I went through like the whole like accommodations process and they were like essentially told me like, oh, like you can do all of this, but it really comes down to like the professor. They can like follow it or not. And I'm like, well, why did I just go through all of that if they could just like throw it out the window? So I was just very confused with the process. And then I had seen Katie post something, I think, on a similar kind of forum that Stephanie is talking about, just like one of those like, you know, Facebook, like FOD groups. And she had been talking a lot about college and accommodations. And I noticed, it was like, oh, she's like a person with an FOD. She's the same age as me, like the same exact age as me. Like, that's really interesting. So I reached out to her and kind of just like introduced myself. And she had actually been going through like a battle herself with accommodations because of her vision. Like Stephanie was talking about how, you know, there was these tests she needed to take, but, you know, the college was like, nope, you have to take them in this certain way. And she's like, I can't see. And so like she was kind of going through that similar process of like trying to figure out accommodations. And so she was just always so like eloquent in the way she would like explain things, and I was explaining my situation. She was like, oh no, like they should be able to do that. You should go back to them and, you know, say XYZ and like have this form. Like, she knew so much and that was totally like out of my realm of even thinking about. And I was just like, this girl like knows her stuff. Like, and even if she doesn't, she just like goes after it. She like gets what she deserves, you know? And I that was like very aspirational to me coming out of like college. Like, I was still kind of trying to like find myself and figure out like how to function in like the world. So that was always great. And she just knew so much about like nutrition and things like that because that's actually what she was studying. So it was just so interesting. So at first our conversations were very like FOD focused, right? Like, we were always talking about this really like heavy kind of like, oh, what to do in this scenario kind of thing. But then over time, like, it just started turning into just like cool like banter, talking about like the woes of like dating, like, and like dating with an FAOD and how like wild and awkward things can get, and then just like sending funny memes to each other. And it just turned into more of like a fun relationship, and like it like went back and forth, right? Like, we would talk about FAOD and that sometimes, but also we would just like cherish life and like mm-hmm. have fun. So it was really great. She was just such a open person. Like, she would like, there was like no topic that she wouldn't talk about. Like I would like be hesitant to ask a question, like, oh, I don't know, like, this might be too private for somebody, like, they might not want to answer. And she would be like, oh no, like, let's get into it. So that was pretty amazing because I'm not necessarily used to that kind of response from people. So yeah, I just wish everybody knew her. She's like the type of person that I wish everybody knew her.
Huh. Well, you guys both speak so highly of her. Now, Stephanie, Tasia, neither of you met her in person ever.
No, we're shaking our heads. You can't see us shaking our heads because. But yeah, neither of us have ever met her in person, which I think it's a different kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that Tasia and I, when we talked about wanting to do an episode to honor Katie and who she was, like, we had to acknowledge the fact that this is a relationship where Katie lived in Ireland, right? And so neither of us had met her in person, and yet we had formed such a close bond, like, with this person. And
I didn't realize she lived overseas.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so you know, it's interesting because I think back a couple years ago, Katie got really sick and she reached out via text and she's asking questions and I'm writing her medical history down and trying to connect with different doctors and recognizing for the first time my inability to be able to really help her in the way that I wanted to, because I can't drive to her or fly to her, really, like the stage that I'm at in life. Like, it's hard because when you feel a close bond to a friend, right, like you drop everything and you go, like you be with them, right? Like, I think that is just part of who I am. And so like not being able to do that, like when she got really sick, I felt very paralyzed. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting on the couch in front of the fire and just kind of like, I can hold lots of different spaces, but just losing it. Like, because for a couple of reasons, one guy just couldn't do anything. And then the other, you know, she has LCHAD, which is very similar to, like, which is Christopher's condition. And like, there's just all these emotions, right? And so, and I share all that just to say that, to try to like paint a picture of like how deeply connected like I felt to this person who I never met in person. Like, and then when they pass, I think what Tayshia and I both struggled with or chatted through is like, when you haven't met a person in person, you feel like almost strange about the grief that you're experiencing, because it's real. Like, it's real grief. You had this bond that because of the rare disease. And I think those of us in the rare disease community recognize, like, you know, it's complicated because your next door neighbor may or may not have a rare disease. Nobody within maybe like a 60-mile radius might have the condition that you have, or even the state, right? So like, you were put into a position where you form really significant bonds with people who you wouldn't otherwise form those bonds with, but it doesn't make them any less significant because they aren't next door or because you can't go drive and see them when they're sick. It creates extra challenges. But Tayshia and I, when Tayshia called me, it would be a year ago today, and told me that Katie passed, I was just like, I was so grateful to have Tayshia because I knew that we had a very similar form of grief, a form of grief that we weren't going to be able to go to a funeral or a memorial, or, you know, like neither of us had met her in person. And that didn't make us imposters in the grief process, right?
Ooh, what a good line.
So Tayshia, I don't know what you want to add to that. I kind of like just went off on a rampage and I could keep talking, but I want to pause because I'll just keep talking.
I mean, you really said it so well. You just like, it's like so strange because it's like, I feel like I knew Katie better than I knew some people who I like interact with, right? Like that I, you know, let's say an acquaintance or like coworker or whoever, right? Like, so it was very bizarre because it's just like this person, and like people are like, oh, someone close to you has died, and you're like, yeah, like my friend, and in your mind you're thinking, but I've never met them, but like you, like it doesn't even matter, right? Because it's like you just hold that relationship so closely. And like with Katie, like she loved, or not loved, I don't think she loved them. They were a better form of communication for her, but like voice notes. So like we would text, but then after a while, especially as she was, you know, getting sicker, and she also did struggle with like the vision element, like texting was hard. So she would use voice notes. And so I like was hearing her voice, right? So that was even like an even extra level of like closeness, because it's like it almost felt like she was there, right? Like, because I would have all these voice notes and hear them. I am not as good at voice notes, but I tried, like, for her. And that's what you that's what you do for friends, right? Like, you do things that you wouldn't normally do. And I was like, okay, here we go, I'm gonna try a voice note, like, can you hear me? Like, I probably sounded like such a dork, but she was just like, oh no, this is great, this is much better, because then I don't have to like read texts. And you know, I think one thing, me personally, like I will just hold it for like a while, is like I was bound and determined, like I wanted to get like to Katie, because especially, you know, she was in Ireland and then she eventually ended up going to the UK and was in the hospital there for a very long time. And, you know, I talked to her a lot about she was okay there. Like, she did have a few friends who were in that area and would come visit her in the hospital. But, like, I know, Stephanie knows, everybody knows, like, the hospital is a very lonely place. Like, even when, you know, you have people coming to visit, like, it's few and far between, because especially when it's...
There's still a lot of empty hours.
Yeah, it's so... And especially when it's that long. Like, she was in the hospital for so long. So I was like, I'm gonna get there. Like, I'm gonna go. I have family who has family there. And it's just, you know, like Stephanie said, like, life happened and I didn't make it there. And I think that's, like, one thing I will always hold a little bit of regret about, is, like, I didn't just, like, do it. Cause yeah, then the, you know, call came and it was like, she's like, and now I don't know. Like, I was very upset that I never got to see her in person, I guess. But also I think now I've kind of, like, settled myself to the fact that, like, I think our relationship was meaningful, even if we never saw each other in person.
Mm-hmm. I don't think the meaning of your relationship would increase by any means if you had made it over there. And you have the complexities of your condition. So, you know, that adds a layer in terms of traveling so far, right?
Right. And she always talked about, she always wanted to come here too. Like, she was always like, she came to the U.S. one time, I remember. And, like, she would talk about that and she would say, like, oh, like, you know, I'm going to get back there someday. And, like, I remember she would always talk about Florida and, like, going to the beach. And I was just like, I don't live anywhere near Florida. You realize that, right? And she's like, yeah. But I'm like, I'll meet you in Florida. Don't worry. Like, if you come anywhere in the U.S., like, I will be there.
I'll,
like,
get myself there.
Yeah.
Was she able to work in her passion in nutrition? Because you said she studied nutrition. Because I could see, her background and her condition making her very empathetic in that world, you know, and helping others who, you know, need a medically necessary nutrition plan, right?
Yeah, I don't know if she really ever got to do it professionally, because she, you know, she got the education for it. And then at that point, that's when she got pretty sick and wasn't able to do it professionally. But I always think, like, she kind of did it for all of us. Like, she did it for the community for free.
It sure sounds like it.
There's really not a person I've talked to, I don't think, in the FAOD community who hadn't talked to Katie at some point about something. And usually it was, like, nutrition-based. So I like to think that, like, even if she didn't get to do it professionally, she kind of did get to do it. But Stephanie, I don't know if you know any more details on that.
I totally agree with you, Tasia. That's my understanding too. It's things got complicated with her health before she was able to finish some of the training that she was hoping to do. But I think, and this goes into a little bit, we talked about the advocacy piece and how Katie embodied advocacy, and that is in part of how she did it. Like, she did a lot of reading. She did a lot of research. And as anything with rare disease, right, you are constantly forced to, like, think outside of the box. And sometimes that takes you down paths that might be annoying to, like, clinicians or, you know, but, like, she was really good at asking questions, like, and showing up to ask the questions. You know, we did, for our FAOD conference one year, we tried to do hybrid, which was very hard, but we had a separate session for our international folks that they could just come and talk with the clinicians. And Katie was sick, showed up with her questions, prepared her questions ahead of time, and she asked her questions. She asked all of her questions. And that's one of the things that I loved about her, is that I feel like, you know, as patients, as caregivers, like, we always have questions and are trying to figure out that line and balance of, right, asking the question, I say poking the bear, like, you know, in the sense of, like, when do you kind of push back a little bit with a clinician because you know your body, you know you're the data, right? Like, versus, okay, but I'm not a doctor, right? And they have had the formal education. And so how do we go back and forth? How do we partner as a team? How do we? And I feel like Katie was always pushing those boundaries and asking the questions and refusing to give up. And I think depending on your clinical environment, some clinicians are more equipped or willing to have that tension and pull and push relationship. And Christopher has been really blessed in his life to have an amazing community of clinicians that have really embraced that kind of relationship. But not everybody has that experience. And so I think Katie always reminded me of like, use your voice, like speak up, use your voice. And I hope that people that listen to this are reminded through her and through her experience the importance of not just showing up, right, to your appointments and to your visits and stuff, but like preparing questions ahead of time, using your voice, asking the question that might kind of get, you know, maybe a provider a little bit like ruffled or whatever, but there's greater good in that. Because I do believe the strongest providers I've ever seen, when they get like a little shocked by the question, they then go back and they think about it. And that changes the future for all FAODs when you're able to take that step, but it can be uncomfortable. But she wasn't afraid of being like creating a situation where one might be a little uncomfortable. Like she was okay with that. And that's beautiful.
I think that's a really important element. Unfortunately, a lot of us are so low on energy. So the idea of going to these appointments and preparing for these appointments is so daunting. But you're right, it's so important.
Yeah, no, I literally, as Stephanie was talking, I was thinking like, just, there's no better word I can think of, but like Katie was like relentless, but like not in like that. I feel like that word has like a negative connotation, but I don't mean it negatively at all. She just like, cause I genuinely can't imagine, like even when she was like in the hospital and very, very ill, like she would be describing like what she was doing to like make sure that she was getting the care, like to have the best possible outcome, which from what she describes was like a struggle. Like it was not like a straightforward situation. And I just can't imagine. I can't imagine being that sick and that like still like having the drive and the want to do that. Like that is the hardest part, right? Because it's like we all say we can do that and want to do that. And like, I know it's taken me a very long time to like get to that point. Like I'm not naturally like this is like a negative word, but like I'm a non-confrontational person like by nature. And so it took me a long time, like through my teenage years, through young adulthood, to realize that like confrontation isn't always a bad thing. Like Stephanie said, like sometimes it creates relationships and creates lines of communication that you wouldn't get normally. So I've had to learn that, and it's been a process. And she just was like kind of this example, and like not that she probably didn't have to learn it too, but she just was like naturally that way. Like she didn't turn away from the hard thing, she didn't turn away from like fighting for herself and others too. Like she would talk to others and be like, no, like you should stand up for yourself, you should talk to your doctors about this. You shouldn't feel afraid to do that. And even in like her situation when things got pretty bad, like she still just continued to do it because that was who she was. Mm. So
did she move to the UK for better care for herself toward the end?
Yeah, she, from what she told me, she essentially like checked herself out of care in Ireland where she was, and she got on a plane and she went to the UK and checked herself in because she just was nervous about the care she was getting. Yeah. And she wanted to have a better potential and hopefully a better outcome. I think she had connections there too. So okay. I think obviously that like helped, right? And she did her research and she kind of like knew mm-hmm. where she was going.
She had a plan.
Yeah. So, yep. That alone just like kind of just shows you who she was as a person. Cause like how many people would do that? Not many.
Right. So I think I'd be remiss to not bring up the fact that we picked this date just because it was a convenient one for the three of us. But the day that we're recording this episode is the 1-year anniversary of her passing away. There are some signs in the universe that are hard to ignore. And
to me, I feel like that's a very unique one.
Yeah, we did it. I don't think we did it on purpose. No. You know, we knew like this was around the time. And then I looked back and I was like, oh, wow, that was 1 year ago today. Exactly.
That is so crazy to me. The universe definitely shows some signs in odd places because I didn't know. I mean, you could have told me Katie passed away 3 years ago or, you know, whenever. I didn't have a relationship with Katie. And I'm the one that emailed you guys to try to come up with recording times. So I find that to be really unique and really meaningful. And that just somehow Katie knows that we're doing this episode today. And I'm getting emotional and I didn't know her, but I do know how important these friendships are. And I know, you know, that there is a gap in terms of what my friends locally can understand and what, you know, my close friend with mitochondrial disease, how our relationship differs, you know, and I don't have a face-to-face relationship. And I again, cannot, and I don't want to diminish that friendship. But if I lost her, it would be a really monumental loss in my mind and for me.
No, I think when you have unique experiences and unique experiences connect you with other people. I even think, so when my sister passed away, I have a dear friend, Rosia from England, who her and I became pen pals after both of our sisters passed away. And we didn't meet until, I mean, for years. It was just a couple years ago. We had known each other for a long time. Don't ask me to do the math on the spot. But
how did you become acquainted with her?
Yeah, right. Because this was before Facebook as well, right?
Like a pen pal is such a cute little term, right?
Totally pen pals via email. But it reminds me, like, it was through a support. It was through like a losing a sibling support group.
Okay.
And it just reminds me that when you have these creative relationships, you know, based on hard things, whether it's like the loss of a loved one, whether it's rare disease, right? You go deep so quick that you like develop deep roots with each other that create beautiful like flowers that could not be created if you weren't willing to share those roots. And so then when you lose that person, then you also have to find very creative ways to grieve. Like you know, and so I think that's something to just, I hope that those that are listening, something just to think about, because I think a lot of the people in our Mito space have very deep relationships with people that they may never meet, especially if you're homebound, right? Like, and because we are in rare disease space, people die and that's super hard. And so how do we think about, learn from like grieving outside of the box? Like what can we do to honor those people? You know, in this moment, Paige and I are able to do that through a podcast, right? Not everybody's going to be able to do a podcast, you know? So what does that mean? Like, does that mean? And so like, I feel like I'm kind of constantly just thinking about it. I do a lot with writing. So for me, it always involves some form of writing and I like to burn things. So maybe it involves burning things as well. Like, you know.
Safely. Stephanie burns safely. Things yeah. safely.
Safely. I'm not even clarify yeah. that. I could get in trouble. Totally. I have a fireplace. It's very safe.
And still be a role model in your life, listeners.
You know, and laughter, right? Like yeah. there's beauty and laughter. And so I think like, Tasia, one of the things yeah. that you and I talked about when we were preparing for this episode was Katie's dark humor.
Dark humor.
And yeah, the importance
that's what
of
you guys
dark
have taught
humor.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we want to touch on that at all
Let's
here.
Let's do
but
it.
There's, like...
how is that helpful? And How have you found it appropriate? Like through your grief?
Yeah. Katie was just like so comfortable with her own mortality.
Yeah.
Like she just knew, right? Like she tried really hard to like be healthy and stay alive and do the best she could. But like she was very like, I think the flip side of like knowing your own mortality is also like appreciating it, like appreciating kind of like those little moments that like you wouldn't normally like that would just pass by normally. And I think that's one thing Katie taught me specifically, and like maybe even like Katie's death, unfortunately, like even more taught me, was that like even these days that like I was like out there like right like shoveling snow, like, and I'm just like, oh, this is so frustrating, like what's like what, ugh, like, you know, just those little. And then like I feel like ever since she passed away, I'm more apt to just stop and be like, hey, like I can even do this, like I'm out here in the snow, like out here in the snow experiencing life, and isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Like even if I'm frustrated, even if it's not ideal, even if things are hard, I'm here and that's what matters. And she was like that her whole life. You know, she fought for what she wanted, but she was really like full of life and appreciated life. And it just, yeah, she was just an amazing person. And I think back to like the memories. It's so weird, the memories we have, but it's like, we never really met in person. So it's like weird to say, but like, I feel like I have memories with her because like just the things we talk about and the conversations we've had. I went on a trip to Italy with my parents, and she was the one who like, she had gone with her parents to Italy. Aww. And so she like literally had like given me like a whole like travel itinerary pretty much. And
did
she
you
had told
feel
me,
her while you were on the trip? Yeah.
So there was this one town that she said, oh, you're going to the Amalfi Coast, like you have to go to this town, Atrani, which is this tiny little town that like is not really super touristy, and like people would normally just like probably pass it by for like the bigger, more exciting towns. And I probably wouldn't have stopped there or like done it if it hadn't been for her and like suggesting it. And I remember going there and just like walking around in these little, and like snapping some pictures of like, you know, the little like cat on the moped and like the scenic like ocean. And like it was just so beautiful. It was like such a beautiful place. And I remember I like walking around being like, oh yeah, like this would be a place that like only Katie would find and like appreciate as much as she did. Mm-hmm. So I keep saying, I'm like, I hope I get to go back someday.
Yeah.
Because I think it would remind me of her.
Yeah, and make like, you feel connected.
She just loved it so much. So I hope I do. But I'm so glad that I even saw it. It was like because of her that I even saw it in the first place. Like I would have just not even, it wouldn't have even been on my radar. So yeah, it's like I have a memory that she wasn't there, but like the memory was because of her, I guess.
Right, right.
And just us talking about it and like the exploring. She was such an explorer too. Like she never let her FEOD like stop her from doing anything. She would like find ways around it, which like I super appreciate because like I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm not going to not do it. I might have to do it differently, but I'm going to do it and I'm going to figure out how to do it. And it was so good to have somebody to have that camaraderie with to like figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
So sorry, that was rambling, but
wasn't rambling at all. You guys, I think you both saw life with a more unique lens to appreciate some of these moments that pass others by, you know, and understanding your mortality is, I mean, yes, we're all inching toward it, but I think with a disease like this or with any rare disease, you know, it just puts you in a unique position to be thinking about it more frequently than the average person. My husband and I are the same age, but I think about it way more often than he does because I have this lovely disease and he, as far as we know, doesn't have any disease. But I think, you know, what you were saying earlier in the episode, that you obviously became friends because of this, but then your connection and dedication to your friendship grew so much that you were talking about like traveling in this tiny town in Italy and, you know, all these other things that have nothing to do with FAOD. You know, it was a full friendship, whether you ever saw her in person or not, right? I mean, I have friends that I don't see very often at all, and the friendship, you know, can continue to withstand because of the conversation we have, you know, but I feel so connected to so many of the people that I've met through the podcast and doing many episodes, even with a few of them. And I really, or like, you know, Stephanie and I talk several times a week and I have never met her in person. And I forget that I have never met Stephanie Harry in person. It is a very odd idea, but that's the same way I think a lot of us feel within our support calls, right? And those friendships should not be diminished at all. There's so much beauty in appreciating what someone else is going through at the deepest level, you know? I really hope that you can get back to that town in Italy. I think that would be a really beautiful way to honor her and maybe to allow yourself to splurge on an extra souvenir there that you could bring home and really remember her on a more everyday basis with this town. You know, that's a special bond that has nothing to do with FAOD. And that's what's really cool. You know, we're not only our disease, and it sounds like she helped you think outside of FAOD life, right?
I think it's, you know, it's about, like, these relationships are about community, right? And a different kind of community. A lot of times we think of community and we think of geographic, where we're located, and we think of, you know, our neighbors, and we think of, but the reality is, I think with Zoom existing, but even before Zoom, right? Again, I mentioned I had a pen pal. Like, you create community, you create these spaces. And I think that's why you grieve when somebody in your community is gone, right? Like, but there's such beauty in the spaces that we hold for each other. And when we engage in those spaces and are able to create different types of community, and I think our rare disease community is a different type of community that, you know, many people that I talk to, myself included, might not be a community that you would have chosen to be a part of per se or had wished it. But being here, like, you're just, I am continued to be awed by the beauty and the beauty of relationship and the beauty of deep wisdom that exists in our community.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly can't really imagine my life without it. Like, I know, obviously, like, when I was younger, there was not, like, I probably was, it wasn't until I was like probably like 12 or 13 that I even knew somebody else with like a, I wouldn't even classify it as a rare disease, like a chronic illness of any sort. And then kind of after that, it's like throughout my life, it's just been like building these relationships, some in person, which are like obviously very great too, but like most of them, I would call them virtual, or like, you know, like me and Stephanie, like we don't, like we've seen each other, we've met, which has been great, but like we don't see each other often. But when we do, it just feels like it's like, you know, we've known each other forever kind of thing. So yeah, I can't imagine life without that like sense of community and like knowing that there's other people who are going through what you're going through and that you can just like
say things that you maybe wouldn't say to other people, and they're not going to be like scared of it or be like, oh, like shocked, right? Like they're just going to be like, oh yeah, that happens to me all the time too. Like, let's talk about it, which was totally Katie. Like I said, there was really like no question that you would ask her that would scare her. Because I asked some weird ones at some points in time, and she was just like, oh yeah, like that's happened to me too. And like it's just so comforting.
And we all deserve to be able to talk about the ins and outs of this disease. It's not just, you know, this high level idea. It's the daily struggle of it. You know, I mean, I just had a big issue with insurance and my physical therapy yesterday. Like, you know, a lot of my friends don't want to hear about that. You know, I'm 41 years old. My friends aren't, you know, in that world, right? But yeah, it's this is just so important. And I feel like, you know, a lot of what we've said has felt similar or along the same grain, right? But these friendships are always developing. It's not like, you know, Stephanie and Tasia met or virtually met Katie before, you know, all of these, you know, Zoom and all these different things came to be. And now friendships don't, like, friendships are forming like this all the time. And I think MedoAction does a really good job as an organization of prioritizing making those connections and creating support groups for every type of person and every need. And those support groups, I would say, can be just as pivotal, you know, for someone with a mito condition than, you know, some of the physician appointment. I mean, you can get so much good information, some support. Like, there's so much to be, to benefit from within those support groups. And, you know, this friendship didn't just like get created in a vacuum. You know, there's so many examples of these types of friendships. And when I'm on a support call, sometimes a friend of mine is on it, but other times I'm seeing, you know, that there are a couple in, you know, maybe like 2-3 people that it seems like they're very close and they met through the support call and maybe they haven't met each other either, you know, and they're continuing to develop. So it's still time to enter, right? If you're listening and you have a mito condition or someone that you love has a mito condition and you've never participated in a support call, and you know, you can enter our space, like you can enter these calls and be part of this community and feel that support and feel the benefits that, you know, Stephanie and Tasia felt from Katie. And I also want to say, and obviously Katie can't say it herself, but I can guarantee you that Katie benefited from things that the two of you gave to her emotionally. And I think that really needs to be stated because you two are talking about how beneficial she was in your lives. But I know that just hearing you guys speak and the empathy that you guys show, I know that you are huge pillars in her life. I am sure of that. And I want everyone who's listening to prioritize making those connections because we all deserve having them, and feeling isolated can be a really scary place. And MedoAction really, I think, prioritizes in a way that maybe some other organizations don't. They prioritize these connections and helping us all form them. So I thank MedoAction for that. And in the show notes, we'll have a link to all of our support calls. I think that's a really important step after listening to this episode is figuring out which ones fit for you the best, you know. And Stephanie and Tasia, grief is so hard, and you know, it'll always stay with you. It's not going to necessarily go away, and it shouldn't go away because, you know, Katie was such a beautiful person and she made such an impact on you both. I challenge you to continue to find ways to find her in your lives and to keep her in your heart. And I know that can be hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope we gave as much to her as she did to us. Just a fun little tidbit about Katie, and just to like hit this point home that like you, like when you don't know someone in person, but like you feel like you know them. So I, for the longest time, like Katie was just such a big, like to me, she was just such a big person, like big meaning like full of life and like,
you know, sometimes you're always like, you think people are taller than they are. Like, I assume Katie was like my height. Like, I'm 5'7". I assume she was like my height or like taller. Cause like in my mind, she was just this like big person and like, just like I said, like relentless, right? So like, I was like, oh, she's so big. And then I remember I saw a picture of her once and I was like, oh my gosh, she's so tiny. Like, she was literally like very small. And I brought it up one time and she was like, oh, yeah, I'm really sure. I'm like 5'1" or something. Like, I don't even know. Like, she was so tiny. And I was just like, what a spirit, like, packaged in such a little body. Like, I just expected her, like, in my mind, she was like 6 feet tall, but she's really this tiny little person. And it was just great. It just like hits home that like, oh, wow. Like, if I had ever seen her in person walking up, I would have been like, but yeah, we love her and we miss her for sure.
Yeah, it's very clear that you both miss her. And I'm very sorry that your friend isn't here. I'm with you in feeling those feelings. And I have faith in both of you that you will keep her memory alive.
Well, thanks, Marcy. Thanks for holding space for us today.
Of course, of course. And please check out all of our support calls and find ways to make connections through our community. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.